My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. First off, we've got a returning guest, a returning champion, if you will, Daniel Dowdy from the Incredible Cannonball podcast, and also our Wishmaster 2 and Demon Tree episodes joins us again. And in honor of that, and also it being my turn to pick, we are watching a very recent movie, 2020's Unhinged, starring Russell Crowe and a bunch of people who do not matter. It was my turn to pick this, and I picked this because, you know, Zodiac Motherfucker on Twitter kept talking about how awesome it was, and I'm like, that sounds like fun. So I watched it while I was bored at work one day, while also doing work. You're not going to get me on that one. And I kind of loved it, and I thought it would be great for the pod, so I made you guys watch it as well. So I guess let's go around, and would you recommend this to people? Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, I would definitely give it a recommend. I'm not a what you would call a movie guy, and I'm realizing this is only the second movie released in 2020 that I have actually seen, the other being Dune. So I feel very up to speed on the state of cinema right now.
You picked two good ones.
Yeah, although this one, it was released in theaters at the height of the pandemic, and then Russell Crowe was on social media trying to convince people to go to it. So this movie actually probably has a body count.
Oh, no.
I mean, so did the Democratic presidential primary. You know, it all comes out in the wash.
Yeah. Anyways, Raul, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a lot of fun. Definitely highly recommend. Maybe the best movie we've watched, actually, come to think of it.
It's either this or Terminator 3 or Wishmaster. But
wait, we haven't reviewed. Oh, we did do T3. I don't remember that. It's
like
been a long time ago.
2016 or something.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was your pick, and I'd be surprised if you didn't think it was great. Ronald, what'd you make of this?
A lot of fun. Great movie. Definitely recommend. It's not exactly what you'd expect, but it's. If you're looking for, like, you know, adrenaline rush, kind of chase down thriller, this is it. This is what you've been looking for. Just go watch.
We hit some audio quality issues here, but the basic gist of what was lost is just that we told Dan to start summarizing. And here we go with Dan's summary.
All right. So we open on the most divorced guy in the world, hanging out in an SUV, popping pills. He's an absolute mess. He gets out. This is Russell Crowe playing a large American man. He's parked out in front of some McMansion. He throws his wedding ring. He takes his wedding ring off, looks at it, throws it away, and then gets some kind of like, it almost looked like a climbing implement, like a kind of like axe hammer thingy. Goes in and
just completely obliterates a man and a woman inside the house, and then sets it on fire and walks away. Cut then to a frazzled single mom, recently divorced, trying to get her family together to get the day started. Is she going to have enough time to get her kid to school and also a very important appointment with a client? Turns out no, because she decided to take the freeway instead. Always a wrong move. So while she's in traffic, she ends up having like a little almost fender bender with this guy in a big F-250 kind of truck. And some honking is involved. He doesn't take kind of this, and he, you know, pulls over and rolls his window down, and it's the murdering maniac Russell Crowe. And he's sort of in a very convincing Southern drawl, is you know, saying like folks ought to apologize for when they wrong somebody, you know, and that kind of stuff. She's not having any of it. She's a frazzled single mom, you know. She's not going to have any of it. So she was like, yeah, you know, fuck off. So he does not take kind to this, and this sets off a cat and mouse chase in automobiles around what was really giving me a lot of Houston vibes. And I looked it up, and the movie was produced in New Orleans. So we are in the same sort of general area of swampy Gulf Coast. So I felt pretty, you know, vindicated by that. Anyway, you're going to have to forgive me. Like, details are not going to be my strong suit in all this, but like, she ends up getting like, he tries to run her off the road. She's really scared. She pulls into like a, she gets the kid to school, but he has somehow followed her, and she's at a gas station. She's like real nervous and explains to the people there about what's going on. They're like, all right, we'll help you out. A very helpful young man goes and walks out to the car with her while she fills up, and then like stands in the way of Russell Crowe's big truck when she like drives off, thinking like, okay, you know, I'll just stand in this guy's way. But no, this is Russell Crowe, and he's unhinged. And he goes to run this dude over, picks him up on the hood, and then just, you know, creams him. Actually, he gets cream come from a car coming the other way. This sort of inaugurates a kind of what you might call like Fury Road part. No, that was early. Anyway, Russell Crowe he pulled a trick of like switching phones. He's menacing her with the phone. She's trying to call for help and she can't call for help. She's trying to hit her divorce lawyer. Is trying to get a hold of her to sign these damn divorce papers.
And that's 3 minutes. That's the summary you guys are getting. I will say that after this, the movie continues to escalate in insane ways. And yes. Until by the end, it's just Russell Crowe as literally Michael Myers, but a little more talkative, and the single mom hiding in a house and eventually murdering him with scissors after her faith in every single institution has been shattered by their utter incompetence at dealing with one kind of big guy who, for some reason, they just...
no one can stop him.
Yeah.
Well, it's very thematically resonant in one, you know... And I guess we'll get into it. I mean, I don't want to step on anybody's toes as we discuss the whole thing. But anyway, yeah, it escalates. It really struck me as more of a slasher film as it went on.
Definitely.
It's sort of like if Fury Road and a slasher movie had a baby starring Jumbo Russell Crowe.
Yeah. Okay. And before we start on like high points, I would like to pitch you guys on something though. So okay. The Russell Crowe's character is never named in this. So I, of course, started calling him Johnny No Hinges, the most unhinged man to ever live.
Did he not give his name as Tom?
That Tom turns Cooper? Out to be a lie. He is credited in the credits only as the man.
Oh, okay. Well, Johnny Unhinged then. That's all I had. I referred to him in my notes.
No. Johnny No Hinges, like he's a 1930s gangster.
Hey, this guy ain't got no hinges.
Yeah, exactly. His doors, they're all on the floor. You don't believe in hinges. It's great. It's nuts. And so on. Okay. Yeah. So anyways, let's get into some high points. And I would like to start, which is, I think the obvious high point is just how fucking crazy Russell Crowe is in this movie.
Yeah.
And the sheer insanity of the things they have him do. So a lot of spoilers here. Check this movie out. But my favorite point, and maybe we should go around and just say our favorite Russell Crowe thing, is he confronts the Alpha McPoyle from It's Always Sunny. People will tell me that it's the same actor playing a different role. I don't cotton to that. It's just the Alpha McPoyle. And he first smashes a coffee cup into his face, then slams his head repeatedly into a table, and then somehow murders him by stabbing a butter knife through his spinal column, which is very impossible to me, but was very fun to watch.
Are you sure it's through his spine, though? Because I feel like just being stabbed in the neck would kill you.
It's somehow through the center back of his neck, man.
It's through his center?
Yeah, it's pretty instant, which leads me to believe some sort of, like, you know, notochord severing or whatever. And that is very impressive. It just goes to show you, like, the upper body strength Mr. Crowe has.
He was very large.
I can even cut him with one of those at the IHOP. But
you gotta admit that the diner has some high-quality flatware.
Yeah.
It has to withstand a lot of use. Yeah,
I don't know why they invested in solid titanium butter knives, but I guess it's good that they did, or else he couldn't have done that.
That's Waffle House for you.
It would have just been a much more painful death.
They got one of those new. They got one of those new CEOs, and he's trying to make his impression. She's trying to make his splash in the organization. And he was like all titanium implements.
We got this sweet new...
Sir, that'll be $30 trillion.
it's going to be worth it if one McPoyle dies by our blades.
Little known fact, every person that dies in an IHOP, the IHOP gets stronger by absorbing their soul. So,
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's really just, honestly, it's an investment in their future.
Yeah.
IHOP is a fairly satanic company. Do you guys remember when they got involved in an protracted legal battle with a Christian ministry called the International House of Prayer?
I like how you say remember as if like everyone knew about it at the time.
Oh, I'm sorry that you guys didn't keep up on the, you know, American fast casual diner versus Christianity litigation. I thought it sort of stuck out in the public consciousness.
Yeah, I was only really aware of the O'Charley's rivalry with the Southern Baptist Convention. I didn't really know about the IHOP thing. That's a new one.
Why didn't they just join forces?
Because IHOP clip like 100% in Satan's corner.
But pancakes and prayer, I feel like they kind of go together.
You'd think that, but actually Christianity is very strongly pro-waffle because of a weird line in the Gospel of John.
Oh, that makes me Christian then. Because I would take a waffle over a pancake.
You're a waffle man?
I think so, yeah.
I can't believe what I'm hearing, this heresy.
I know. I mean, we've known each other for a long time, and I've been hiding it from you, honestly, because I was afraid of this exact reaction.
Yeah, well, I'm cutting you out now.
Yeah. You probably should.
This is a really intense episode of the Waffle Cast, you guys.
Anyways, anyone else got something fun that they think Russell Crowe does?
There's this really awesome moment where Russell Crowe has turned his back. And no, he's not turned his back, but the Emperor comes out and he's like, "Show me your face, Gladiator." And Russell Crowe's like, he doesn't want to do it.
Another classic or a hole. I watched the wrong movie. We said watch Unhinged, and he's like, "What's less?" And they must obviously they didn't mean this movie called Unhinged. What's less hinged than gladiatorial combat? I'll go watch that.
Who lost more hinges than Maximus? I mean,
exactly.
I guess I got one that I. So it's not. I guess it's not like the most like impressive kind of, you know, element to the performance or anything, but I did really love like just the rumbling, restrained menace that he had going on with the faux polite thing. And I just wanted to say that I think Russell Crowe is very convincing as a lumbering menace of a southern suburb. I think he really pulled that energy off.
I agree. Was it movie magic to make him so gigantic? Is he actually so big?
Yeah, he gained the weight for the role.
But I mean, he seemed taller too. I remember it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think he's just a tall guy.
Hmm. Maybe they did some Hobbit force perspective stuff.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah,
yeah. They might have also. He might also had like some adding on.
Yeah, I mean, they did put him in an enormous fuck off truck at least.
Right.
Did
yeah,
like that truck. Yeah.
But that's as a resident. As a resident of a southern suburb myself, the verisimilitude that an Australian actor directed by a German guy were able to pull off was I was very impressed by it.
You did a wonderful job.
Ronald, you got anything nice to say, or just anything at all that you really loved in this film?
I would just say that just the way that it escalates, like you think I guess like the movie does a good job of tricking you into thinking like, okay, she's got a handle on it now, or like, you know, I understand what the conflict is more going to be. And then he like does something even more insane. It's like, how is he getting away with this? But you know, it makes sense in the context of the movie. So don't get me wrong. It's just like the movie does a really good job of escalating and like raising the stakes throughout. Case in like, point, him just like going to her brother's house and, murdering his girlfriend and lighting him on fire. Not necessarily what I expected to happen next, but I was there for it.
Many things in this movie, like, I feel it's like everything happens about an act sooner than it normally would. Like, he kills a guy in his second interaction with her, and normally you'd have a lot more, like, building minutes before you got to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you end up in a far crazier place.
The movie did open with him executing the two.
That would be a pretty normal opening in a thriller to show you that this guy's still dangerous, but then it would be like sort of lay in the cut for a long time and not have him murder anyone until like the halfway point usually would be a structure on this.
Yeah, I'm going to give this half credit because that guy did die, but he was hit by a car going the other way after he rolled off the truck.
That's something that I think might be going on in this movie that isn't discussed, is that Russell Crowe just has this uncanny ability to arrange for other drivers to kill his enemies. Because that also happens to the police officer.
He has other people do a lot of his killing for him, which, I don't know, thematically ties in with being a big lumbering southern guy.
It's true. Also, the devil's own luck.
Yeah. That's true.
That explains why he was at IHOP.
Yeah, he took that eldritch invocation, and now he gets to re-roll all his luck rolls.
He gets advantage on all of his rolls.
Yeah.
Good for him, man. That's a solid build. People will try to claim it's cheesy, but you know what? It's in the player's manual, and you might as well take it. I also like how mean he is in this movie. There's the scene, as Ronald mentions, where he breaks into the woman's house after having tricked her into sending the police somewhere else by making her choose someone to kill. And then after he's broken into her house, he beats the hell out of her brother's fiance. And then there's this scene where he corners the brother while holding up the woman, kind of like she's unconscious or something, and he's just, you know, puppeting her around. And the brother's brandishing a knife. So Russell Crowe just repeatedly rams her into him. And it's incredible.
Yeah, he basically kills her with his knife, which...
Yeah, once again...
It's going to do some psychological damage.
He's great at arranging things so other people do his killing.
Yeah. Wow, yeah, that just goes back to your point.
and then he ties the brother up, makes him write a really mean note to the sister, then has him read the note to the sister, and then sets him on fire. Although in a low point for the movie, which we may get into later, the movie kind of chickens out at the end and does not have the brother burned to death, even though that's very clearly what happened on screen, because they have the cops say that he's fine, which I straight up did not believe. Yeah,
the way they did that was so ridiculous.
Well, they didn't say he was fine. They said he was fine.
They said he's going to make it. But the cops call her away while she's having a conversation with her kid, and you think it's all serious about something, and then he's like, your brother's going to be okay. you need to hide this from... I don't get it, but...
We lost him. Oh, no, he was just in another room. My bad.
Who hired this guy?
You know, your brother suffers from a somewhat rare mutation that affects 1% of the population, where their skin is actually asbestos. So, I mean, he will get cancer later, but he was surprisingly fire retardant. What else I really enjoyed it here... obviously, just Russell Crowe running around like a maniac slasher in the final cat and mouse sequence is pretty good.
Yeah, that was really it was an interesting shift, because I would have, starting it off, I assumed that the whole thing was going to be car based, and it was largely automobile based. But I kind of figured that that's where his power lies, right? As a belligerent, American. His power resides in the 2-ton death machine he can throw around. But he had turned himself into a 2-ton death machine by the end.
2-ton death machine? My favorite ska band of the early 90s, incidentally.
I think that's 2-tone death machine, right?
I'm not sure it was Lawrence's favorite.
Yeah, it's still Real Big Fish, guys. I'm sorry.
Do you think a guy could actually pull this off?
I'm just
pathetic. Which part?
Just the whole thing, the whole arc. Let's just say you're a huge fan of this movie. You go out and buy a big old truck.
And a hammer.
You think you could do all these scenes in 90 minutes.
It's like the Joker for 45-year-old divorce guys. They're going to go out. Yeah,
kind of is. Orchestrate a lot of things suspiciously well.
Hey, Rahul, I have a serious question for you.
Yeah, hit me.
Did you think that this movie, the TV show 24, happened in real time?
Yeah, for sure. It was exactly 90 minutes.
it was 90 minutes from start to finish, so therefore that's how long he had.
Yeah,
that's how movies work.
Okay, I was just making sure.
Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say, I don't know. Would the cops even respond to someone getting run over at a gas station?
I mean.
Yeah,
we don't really know.
They might just send an ambulance, but
yeah,
it might take them a while to show up.
I think for me, the least, I think he probably wouldn't have gotten out of the IHOP, right? People freaked out when he smashed the mug in the dude's face and backed away. But by that point, the manager is getting the burliest dudes in the kitchen already to go out there and kick you out. You know, yeah. I don't think he would have survived being attacked by, tweaked up line cooks at a fast casual restaurant.
Let's be real. If this had been a Denny's, it would have been a normal state of affairs, and he would have gotten killed in the alley. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Denny's. Yeah.
But I do think that this restaurant was named as kind of a little bit fancier than fast casual.
Yeah,
it was Caraway's or something. So, probably in a nicer part of town. maybe not ready for somebody
all
to get beat to death.
All white collar types are here, so know they're weak.
Right. Yeah. Just saying, maybe they're not used to people getting beat to death with a coffee cup in the front room. But if it had been an IHOP or a Denny's, I mean, Dan's right. He would have just got laid out right there.
I mean, if it had been a Waffle House, he would have been dead from 50 slugs in him, and they're all.
And his car would have been stolen the second he got out of it.
But he would have had the best damn meal of his life.
I mean, he would have gone out on the high of having those hash browns scattered, smothered, and covered. That's the way it would have
been. Oh my God. I want to go to Waffle House.
Yeah, let's go to Waffle House, guys. Although I'm a little afraid that'll be the last restaurant I ever go to.
Just check the parking lot, and if there's an enormous demonic looking pickup truck, don't go inside. Simple.
But I think
Ray is on the grill. You got to go in then.
Now, I'm going to double back a little bit. So I think that the reaction of the diners is a little bit plausible, because by the time he does the thing with the butter knife, you're like, okay, this guy is clearly a cyborg of some description, and I'm not dealing with it. There's some Terminator shit happening, and I want no part of it, you know?
That's a good point.
He's going to try and steal my clothes and my motorcycle.
He's that character from Marvel, whatever, with the robot arm and nothing else.
Winter Soldier?
Yeah. He only has a robot arm.
I can stab people with butter knives.
Yep, that's his thing.
That's actually pretty sweet.
It also we're kind of also describing the Blue Raja from Mystery Men a little bit. He also does butter crime related or butter knife related crime fighting.
Yeah, the Blue
Raja. If you know your history, it makes sense, okay?
Yeah, if you know your history, it makes sense, but it's also super racist, so it's kind of bad either way.
No, but didn't he spend time in India? Wasn't that his thing? Or
I don't think so. I think he lived with his mother and smoked pot.
I don't think it does make sense if you know your history. I'm not positive because I don't know my history that well, but I think I Googled this at one point and there's not really anything related to a Blue Raja using forks.
Yeah. Anyway, I was pretty impressed with Hinge Man's use of technology. He seemed to be like,
he was not a boomer.
You know, he was not a boomer at all.
He was real good. Well, the thing, I think he was a bit of a tech boomer. And that's a specific boomer, the gadget boomer. He was very, very much in on that. But he was very clever with, you know, using the, Find My iPad app to menace a woman.
At least it.
And that actually was pretty cleverly done. I liked that part because so often I watch a bunch, but I've watched enough to know that like a lot of times with like thriller stuff or suspense stuff, there's some contrivance to make cell phones not work. And that was sort of done in this one with the swapping out the phone deal. But instead of like making it to where, well, a cell phone will solve all your problems, it's integral to how this guy is menacing her. I thought that was a cool touch.
Yeah,
definitely.
Anyways, you guys want to get into some low points now?
Sure.
I'm going to start with kind of a serious one, which is I think this movie takes about twice as long to get going as it should. We don't see Johnny No Hinges like doing no hinge shit aside from the prologue until about 20 minutes in. And I think that like a John Carpenter or a, you know, Sam Fuller or Walter Hill would have knocked all that shit out in about, you know, setting up the white or the woman and her like brother and all that in about 5 minutes and let us really get some more like Johnny No Hinge action, you know?
I think the scenes with the brother establishing what a deadbeat he is and how useless he is and just how much this selfless single mom is holding everybody up and all that. Like that went on way too long. Like I got the point, like, okay, I get it. This guy's a shit heel, you know, like just kind of a piece of shit. Okay. But it really was like two or three kind of plot or not plot beats, but like, I don't know. You guys know what I mean? Like they ran that reel a few times too many.
The breakfast scene took about like two to three times as long as it should have been. It should have just been her getting to the table, realizing she doesn't really have time to eat, getting her son out, and making some passive aggressive comment to her brother about how he should be looking for work, and boom, you're done. You know?
He'll roll his eyes and pause, girlfriend, and we get it.
Yeah.
So I agree with you guys. I think that that's right. And that part didn't really serve that much story-wise, because knowing that she's poor or whatever actually doesn't really affect the story all that much. But yeah. I do think that it was intentionally paced that way, because it's kind of a trick on the viewer of like what kind of movie it's going to be. It kind of subverts what you are thinking about by accelerating really quickly once it starts.
Accelerating like perhaps a Ford F-250 pickup truck.
Yeah, right into the rear of your vehicle of your
expectations. Yeah. The medium is the message, people.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but I think it was done intentionally. Whether or not that's a good thing, I don't know. But
I guess we're saying, you know, like Lawrence would have made a different choice, is what we're saying. Yeah.
The reason was given command of Sir Russell Crowe. Actually, I looked it up, and apparently he was too much of an asshole to get a knighthood.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He's got a long section in his Wikipedia page that's just him getting angry and assaulting people.
Well,
also, he's perfect for this movie, then.
Yeah. Inhabits the role. Yeah, so I had one of my lowlights came at the very beginning as well with... And I know, you know, there's no way to avoid it or whatever, and it's about sort of establishing tone and mood or whatever. But I couldn't get past the straight-up propaganda in the credit sequence, where there's, like, it's this sort of, like, edited together, like, with a bunch of clips of, like, news anchory sounding people kind of reading off headlines about how society is crumbling kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where it was harping on, there was, like, a couple of them that were about, like, police departments are struggling to recruit with recent budget cuts and like that kind of stuff. Yeah. And like that fucking annoyed me, because that's never happened. Because they'll just, you know, occupy City Hall and threaten to shoot the mayor if anyone takes away their fucking tanks. But
and
yeah,
they'll do it legally.
Yeah, and they'll all be legal. You know, who's going to stop them? But
say they were afraid for their lives by those budget cuts, and the courts will say it's fine. You know, you couldn't have known that was illegal. You get qualified immunity from overthrowing the government.
That's right. That's right. They were supposed to get new iPads this year, and now they can't. So, you know, time to overthrow the city government.
That's pretty rough. but I get it.
This movie did do a lot of jumping through hoops to try and, even though the cops helped not at all, to try and make the cops look okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was like the cops didn't help, and they couldn't help. Like, she even got in contact with 911 at some point, and they were like, "We can't help you. You're on your own." And it's like that's as much failure as the cops can give you. You know what I mean? Like, literally, they cannot help you because there was a car crash or something. Like, are you kidding?
It was caused by the man who is now trying to kill you.
Yeah, right. Like, oh my god, like, how useless could you be? And they could have easily made some, like, fucking cops are useless and, you know, we gotta fight for ourselves or some kind of message, but they didn't do that. And instead they, yeah, like, danced it and had some propaganda, and it was pretty annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Anyone else got some low points on this one?
Yeah, I didn't think that him killing the brother's fiance was a good move plot wise. Cause it made me not understand his motives. Like, I understand what you guys were saying earlier about this kind of being a slasher movie, and that plays into that perfectly. But I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't fully understand his motivations beyond that. He's just rampaging, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's like, he's like torn between wanting to ruin her life and just killing everyone sort of loosely connected to her. Like, I didn't get the fiance kill is what I'm saying. Like, I get why he killed a lawyer, because he had a bad experience with a lawyer, and, you know, he's a psycho. But
yeah, he killed the lawyer because of goddamn family court. You know, that is perfect to keep it the same. Yeah, I guess maybe that's what he killed the fiance, because being a fiance is the first step toward getting divorced and going to family court.
That must be it. I missed that.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I think at some point in the movie, they basically just abandoned the fact that he had any kind of motivation at all, and he's just killing the...
He's just a psycho,
Did he ever pop any more pills after the prologue?
After he got shot.
Yeah, it's like Max Payne, where you can get shot and it's fine as long as you've got painkillers.
He took, like, a half a bottle, too.
They always do that in movies.
Okay, I didn't catch that. I guess I must have not been paying much close attention when that happened. But that does, I guess that does explain a little more of his Michael Myers like tenacity in the face of all of the physical punishment he ends up taking.
Can you imagine if you applied this tenacity to applying for new jobs?
Well, he'd also need a different personality, because this guy, he's capable of being affable for about a minute, and then he starts ranting, and that's not going to play at a job interview.
Just make sure your interview only lasts a minute.
the thing to understand about Johnny No Hinges is he is the quintessential small business tyrant. This is a guy who does not go and apply for jobs. This is a guy who makes you grovel in front of him for a job at the car lot. You know.
Yeah. But once he's deprived of his natural position of power, he's kind of shiftless and lost in the world until a pretty young woman irritates him. And then, of course,
he'll lash out. Yeah, exactly.
I do wonder, though. So if he's super high on, it was hydrocodone, which I believe is an opioid. So shouldn't he also be very tired and constipated?
Yeah, that's why he's so cranky. He's very tired and constipated.
That's why he's so bloated.
Yeah. I tell you what, he should have done at that IHOP is drink that coffee instead of smash it in that guy's face.
Yeah.
He should have. Yeah.
That was really his first mistake.
It was free coffee too. He won that bet to get the free coffee.
He did. He could have had that coffee, and that would have helped his lethargy and helped move things along downstairs.
Oh my god, it's the all in one.
But instead he murdered a man with a butter knife and
yeah.
I know I keep harping on that, but that is just so absurd to me. I've rewatched that scene a couple of times to make sure it's not a steak knife. It is not. It is a fucking butter knife.
Lawrence goes down to the butcher tomorrow and he's like, "Do you have a hog spine? I need to experiment with a butter knife. I need to see how plausible something is.
Do you have a vegan hog spine? Is that even a thing? I don't really want to support the whole butchery of animals thing, but I got questions.
They don't do anything with a spine, do they? Do butchers? I mean, they'd just be throwing it away normally, wouldn't they?
I go down and I start trying. I guess I go down to the morgue and I'm just like, "Come on, let me in." For some reason, this is less objectionable to me.
Yeah, that is so much worse. Like,
who dedicated themselves to science in here? Raise your hand.
Because I got an experiment that it's science to me. I don't know.
You just have different brands of butter knives with you.
I'm like going frame by frame trying to match what kind of butter knife they had in the movie.
You're kind of calling the prop master. Like, hey, question.
Yeah, they didn't have to have that guy killed that way.
Yeah, they could have just had him beat his head against the table. You know?
Considering how much damage he did from the coffee cup.
It was cool, though.
It was cool.
I mean, we're talking about it, so maybe they did have to do it for... I posted on Twitter a poll of what was the better death, this or... Fuck, I can't even remember what the other one was. And this one made a very, very strong showing in that. I think the other one might have been the blender death from Year Next, which is a better death, but still.
But that's, hey, it's it's in good company.
The blender death, literally, I think that the blender death from Year Next, like the idea of what if we stuck someone's head in a blender and then we turned that blender on, is like the best idea a human being has ever had. And I'm kind of in awe of Simon Barrett for having it. So, the fact that this could even compete with that a little is impressive.
You have a very strange brain, bud.
Yeah, for sure. So I know I'm going on a tangent here, but how exactly does a human head fit into a blender?
Oh, that's the genius of it, Raul. They break, like, she slams it into the top of his head in such a way that it breaks the cup. So he's pretty fucked up and the tines are just embedded in his skull.
Oh.
And then he's still fighting, so she plugs it in. And then he stops fighting and it's incredible. Oh. And I laugh my head off.
So you see, Lawrence doesn't have a weird brain. He's fine.
Yeah, I thought this through. There's a lot of steps.
Yeah. The weird part was the fact that it wouldn't work. And you know what? Lawrence cracked it.
Yeah. Well, no, Simon Barrett cracked it. I'm just over here applauding his taking notes on his genius in the corner.
Appreciating it.
Lawrence is John the Baptist. All right. He's preparing the way.
John the Blender.
So stupid. Do you think a Prius could actually roll over a van?
I was wondering about that. Those things are pretty heavy. Too.
Vans are heavy as fuck.
Well, so are Priuses.
No, Priuses are not that heavy. They're like,
really?
I'll Google it right now. The battery's like 100 pounds.
Okay, well, that's not that bad. I think we can excuse this with the 3,000
for Prius.
I think she got like a little ramp action off the curb, and so hit it
speared like, just right.
Just right so that the center of gravity would tip over. You know,
movies always do this thing where like something terrible happens and then the driver who's an antagonist, he's not there. It always annoys me. I'm like, it's like so predictable. Like
yeah. Oh yeah, they should have just had him dead hanging out in the car and like, oh yeah, he's dead, sweet.
Movie over.
Yeah, that would have been way better, Raul. Great film analysis.
No. What should happen was he snaps his fingers and it was a log of wood in the front driver compartment.
You've fallen into my trap.
My dead jitsu.
You guys are making fun of Rahul's idea that the antagonist should just die halfway through the movie. But I mean, what if he came back as a zombie or a vampire halfway through? Then it's suddenly shit! It's
suddenly Rahul's idea has legs. If you just bring him back as an undead creature, God, we're so stupid.
Or what if she like in the first half she pisses off a rabbi, and then in the second half after she's killed the guy, the rabbi brings him back as a golem.
I like that too. Blue collar golem. Ooh.
Are golems reanimated people? I thought they were like made out of earth.
Well, maybe you could just his one arm is Russell Crowe's arm.
You're still obsessed with the Winter Soldier thing.
Dan, can we get a ruling? Could you make a golem out of a dead body?
Well, I think it's in the monster manual. That's a flesh golem, right?
Oh yeah.
Ah, flesh golem.
Yeah, like a Frankenstein kind of thing.
It's also in Promethean the Created, if that helps any, which it probably doesn't, because I may be I'm one of 10 people on the earth who knows that thing exists.
Is that a World of Darkness game?
Yeah, it's a World of Darkness game where you play as sexy Frankensteins.
Oh.
Two of the 10 people in the world are on this call right now. It's unbelievable.
The thing is, I just created three more. It's great.
How did you only create two more?
I don't know if Dan actually knew about it. He just sort of.
He clearly knew about it.
I had context clues. I actually had a buddy who wrote for White Wolf a little bit. So I had absorbed through osmosis the naming convention. You know, vampire, the masquerade, werewolf, the whatever. You know, mage, the whatever. I forget what all the things
Ascension.
Are. Thank you. Yes. So it struck me as like, Promethean, huh? I bet I know what this is about.
Yeah, there's a weird word, and then colon, and a the, and then a noun.
It's a weird word that evokes a universal monster movie monster. So, yeah, you know.
But also like sexed up or like it's the kind of word that a high schooler would really love.
It's an SAT word for your precocious high schooler.
Word a day.
Yeah, Ronald.
But are all those games in the same world? So like when you play as a sexy vampire, as a sexy Frankenstein, can you fight against a sexy vampire?
I know you're proposing this as a joke, but they absolutely do take place in the same world. Yes.
Yes. No, in fact,
that wasn't a joke. That was serious.
Now what you'll have, there was, so my buddy was involved in a long running game here in Birmingham, right? And so what you'll have is you'll have concurrent game groups running like the vampire one, like the vampires, you know, in Birmingham, right? Like the RPG is like set in your town. And there's also a group playing the mages, and there's also a group playing the mummies. And so sometimes you'll get crossovers.
For the uninitiated, there was one where you played as sexy mummies.
Yeah.
They have to be sexy.
It's actually a game for that one, but that anyway, at least that's how they played it here in my town, which I never participated in. But I at least, you know, I was tangential enough or you know, adjacent enough, I should say.
They're remaking.
God, that sounds so cool.
They're remaking Paramount's Monsters universe.
Well, they did it first.
Yeah.
They did it before 1940.
Oh, right. Sorry. Never mind. I thought you were talking about the Dark Universe, the famously aborted one that gave us one good movie and one bad movie and one movie that did so poorly they decided retroactively it wasn't part of it before it had even started.
Which one was that?
Dracula Untold.
They took Dracula Untold out of the continuity? That was the first movie. That's what. Yeah. That's the fucking first Avenger of the Dark Universe.
Yeah, but then it didn't make money, so they're like, fuck it. The first one is The Mummy, and then that one didn't make money either, so they're just like, okay, we'll make The Invisible Man and forget this.
I'm telling you, what we need to write, fellas, is Dracula Unhinged.
Oh, you know, Russell Crowe was the best part of the new Mummy movie as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
He was in, I didn't know there was, wow, that's crazy. I gotta watch
the Tom Cruise Mummy movie. It was not a great movie, but he was the best part.
Hey, so do you guys, I guess, I don't know if you guys were up enough on the Dark Universe, but did they have Benicio del Toro playing the Wolfman again?
I believe he was, I mean, I think he was in the promo photos they did.
And I mean, so, obviously, if you've got him in there, he's going to play the Wolfman. Because
Wolfman, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's great because he doesn't really need makeup for it.
he does have the hair just right.
Well, when they cast him in the like 2010 Wolfman, which I maintain is a very underrated movie, Rick Baker, who did the makeup, actually commented that when they were doing the wolf, like they didn't actually need to add that much hair to him to do it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, from what I understand, Universal Studios is making like another park in Florida, and I think one of the lands is like the Dark Universe land.
Jesus Christ!
So I don't know if that means the more movies are coming.
Who wants to go visit, 90-degree, 100% humidity, Transylvania?
I'm in.
God.
Also, another problem with that Dracula Untold movie, of course, is that it's the story of Vlad Sepes, but I don't think they actually do the Forest of the Impaled, which is like the whole thing. It's like, yeah. Why'd you bother?
Well, they made a pretty straight movie about a medieval Wallachian prince, because I would see that.
I mean, it's not that straight, though, because he turns into a vampire halfway through.
Oh, well, I mean, that's just accurate to Romanian culture, Lawrence. That's,
yeah.
It
would be dishonest not to do that.
when I was in Romania, I mean, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but it was pretty weird just how much the tourist shops would sell you like Vlad Sepes shit when he's kind of a national hero of theirs, but he's a very like complicated figure because he was also a psychopath who liked to impale people. And the fact that he fought the Turk pretty well kind of doesn't quite cancel that out. But no, you just walk into a gift shop and it was the tackiest Vlad Sepes and also Nicolae Ceausescu shit you can imagine. The Ceausescu one was a real head scratcher.
The other, like, I was gonna say, like, the other, like, world famous, like, Romanian political figure would also be a, you know, real maniac who was bad news.
I mean, he literally gave AIDS to orphans and people are putting him on coffee mugs. And it's like, what the fuck, bro?
Yeah. He was really the, it gets a lot of traffic online, I guess. I don't know. You know, it's debatable how much of a real life thing it is, but the Red Brown Alliance, you know, the kind of national Bolshevism idea of synthesizing Nazism and communism. Ceausescu was actually the guy who did that. He did do that, and it's real not great.
Yeah. Oh,
God damn it, Ceausescu.
What's up?
Oh, nothing. I had nothing to contribute. Ignore that.
Fair enough. Like I do everything you say. Burn. Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to move on to sort of a game?
Sure.
I like to play a game.
Now, I've actually played a trick on you.
Okay. Oh my because God. You guys, game?
No. You thought we were going to do Battle of the Boomers, where we tried to argue who was the ultimate boomer between Johnny No Hinges and Walter White from Breaking Bad. But I'm pulling a twist here and instead just asking you guys an intensely personal question.
Oh wow! Oh
yeah.
Okay. Is the question who's the ultimate boomer between Walter White and Johnny No Hinges?
Man, I tell you what, if we burn through this one quick, we can try that one too because I want this to be about an hour. Fair.
All right.
Yeah. But I came across a question that I was so taken by, I really want to ask you guys and get your answers on the pod. So who was the last person who made you cry? Dan, you go first.
Oh, wow. Okay. So when you say made me cry.
Yeah, right.
Is that like I cried in response to something that was happening? Was it someone was mean to me and I like was made upset?
First let's rule out the news because... Yeah, that's fair. But let's just say, like, the first time it's either a work of art or an interaction, or the last time a work of art you responded to or an interaction you had that, you know, moved you to tears.
Yeah. Well, I think the last one of that would have been when my 4-year-old brought home. She has not been in a school environment since the beginning of COVID, March 2020. And we started her in a pre-K program at a school in February, like right after the big wave of COVID had died down. And we were like, okay, well, it's time to get her back in the school environment. We're going to try this out. We're really nervous about it. She hadn't been like regularly around other kids in a long time. We didn't know quite how it was going to go. But she did great, and she responded so well to it. And she was so excited to go to school every morning. She loved it. And the last week of school was a couple weeks ago. I think it was literally last week. And she brought home her yearbook. You know, they got a yearbook for her little four-year-old pre-K. And she had that open, just staring at all the kids in her class, pointing them out and saying their names and saying, "Daddy, come look, there's so-and-so, there's so-and-so, there's so-and-so." And I just got all misty and I teared up because that was just such a great, it was so wonderful to have that experience. And she got so much out of interacting with her peers, and it was just really great.
Wow. That's awesome.
Really wholesome story. Yeah.
Anyways, my last time was when I was doing a girl and she came so hard and no.
Yeah, we know it's fake.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, he would never cry over that because it happens all the time.
Yeah. Hey. I definitely did feel an intense spiritual connection. It was moved to tears. Nah. Anyways, so I'm actually a pretty light touch when it comes to crying, especially, or like at least welling up, especially like stories where someone dies well or sacrifices themselves for other people. I think it's because I kind of really wish I'd get a good death where, you know, dying, saving a stranger. And I mean, I had a shot at that with the kidney thing, but it didn't really happen because the surgeons were too skilled, which, boo. But anyways, so a lot of that stuff will make me go. So I actually teared up a little bit at the thing I'm going to recommend. But before that, I rewatched Drive like about a month ago. And, you know, that the elevator scene in Drive where, you know, spoilers for Drive, I guess, you know, what's his fate? God damn it. Ryan Gosling and he realizes that the man in the elevator is about to kill him, and the Carey Mulligan who's riding next to him. So like there's this beautiful moment where the music spells and everything goes like slow and he kisses Carey Mulligan, and there's this moment of real intimacy, and it's probably the first he's had in his entire life. And then because he has to do it, he like just murders the hell out of the guy in the elevator with them because he's got a gun and he's going to kill them both. And he's like, you know, stomping his head, and it's like grotesque. And then Carey Mulligan, of course, the next time the elevator stops, she like backs out and is looking at him in horror. And he's looking up at her like, "You can see who I am now. Please, I only did this to protect you. Can't you love me now that you know what I am?" And she's just like looking at him, just like horrified. And the idea of being that revealed to someone and having them reject you, and it's the only like human contact you've ever had, always like that fucks me up pretty bad. So, yeah. Yeah. That's something that, you know, makes me cry every time, a scene where a man gets his head stomped into a pulp in an elevator.
Yeah. But then it's like one of those like where you also have a huge boner. Yeah. Only you, not me. I'm not weird.
No. It's everyone, Ronald. That's the point of that scene. Make the audience cry. It's called the cry rousal. It's a word that was invented for the movie Drive.
Yeah, it's a very important element of doing a chick so good that like you cry when you're back.
She's like, yeah. "Why are you crying?"
That was mediocre. You know, actually, I'm gonna have to check because I'm not sure that even counted as sex. What the hell? Why?
I feel so good that we can feel so good together.
Man, you farted all over that thing that I'd been preparing to say for like a day, Ronald. Sorry, force of habit on that.
Yeah,
one.
Ronald's a pretty bad person. He's just evil.
Yeah. Okay, in my turn, Lawrence just now.
That made you tear up.
Tear up in laughter.
Oh fuck.
It doesn't really take much for me, but it's like, you know, to like tear up a little bit, but full on cry, I don't even know. I guess the last time that I kind of welled up, I was watching Deep Space Nine the other day, and I was watching the episode with Future Jake, where basically there's some episode where it shows Jake like as an old man, and it's kind of an alternate timeline where Sisko died. And it was a nice episode. It was a sweet one. It was obviously an alternate timeline, so it's like one of those which like you could probably skip, but it had some touching moments in it, and you know, it's about losing a parent, and that's tough.
And you also get to see Tony Todd be paternal instead of some kind of maniac, which is very nice.
Yeah. A double bonus.
Yeah. Raul, what horrifying nonsense are you going to say now?
I don't even know where that came from.
the things you say and do.
Ridiculous statement. Okay. So I think the last time I was like moved by a movie or something I saw to the point of feeling those feelings was The Return of the King. It sounds so cheesy, but The Return of the King, when I saw it in theaters back in the day, and like the hobbits are about to bow down to the king Aragorn, and he's like, no, we bow to you, or something like that, and they all bow to them.
It's like, it's like you bow to no man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was great.
So Rahul is now claiming before God and the podcast audience that he has not cried since like 2005.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
What you guys have? Yeah, I don't know.
What about that time in 2009 when I put water on your calzone?
Dude, don't even talk about that. I will actually drive to Virginia and slay you.
I will say, like, I've gotten more, ever since I became a dad, I've been way more susceptible to sentiment and weepiness. And the one that got me the most kind of in the last couple of years was Coco. Because, like, I threw it on like a Saturday morning when, you know, and my kid was like 1.5 or 2. I thought, like, well, she might like the songs and the colors or whatever. And I've, you know, been meaning to watch it. Might give it a go. And they really should have warned you that that movie was about a little girl toddler who never got to say goodbye to her dad, who died, and is trying to reach her from the other side. Because I was a freaking mess the entire time.
Dang, I watched that movie like a week after my grandmother, who was like the person I was closest to and the person I want to be most like in the world, died. And I literally had to leave the theater because I was embarrassing my wife and her family so much from just ugly crying.
It's just gonna, it'll just tear you to shreds, man. I
gotta watch this movie. It sounds intense.
It sounds like a boring movie for babies that I will watch and laugh at all the way through, the idea that I would ever have an emotional response to it.
This is a Pixar movie, right?
Yeah,
it is for babies. Yes. but get this, Rahul. This will count for if anyone tells you to like go to therapy, you can tell them like, well, I saw that movie that made a lot of grown men I know cry. So that counts.
Sweet. Yeah, this counts credits. Therapy
this counts
credits.
For your court ordered therapy. The judge can't throw you in prison now. You saw Coco.
I'll tell you know what? If John Hingeless has simply sat his white ass down and watched Coco
and listened,
maybe none of this had to happen.
You know, I'm throwing this out there. I think the problem was that he sat his white ass down in a truck and then listened to people honk at him. And if he hadn't done that,
that's true.
Anyways, you guys want to do Battle of the Boomers or just recommendations and cautions? We're at about 55 minutes, so we could go either way.
Yeah, let's do recommendations and cautions. We'll keep it a tight 60 here.
Hopefully. All
right, Bad Time Radio.
Okay, I'd like to do recommendations and cautions first, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay, now Dan, I'm gonna recommend something, and you're gonna be like, "Wait, he picked this specifically for you and or me?" And yeah, kind of true, but also everyone should check this out. It's a novel called Between Two Fires by Christopher Bulman. I might be mispronouncing that. It's a horror novel set during the height of the Black Death in France, right after the Battle of Crecy. And the thing that's going on in the background of it is that there's a second war in heaven, and so the devils have unleashed plagues and monsters and shit on the earth. And through all of that, a little girl who has supernatural powers and something, no one can quite figure out what, finds a fallen knight, and they have to go together on a pilgrimage, first to Paris and then to Avignon, to do something that the girl doesn't know what. And oh, wow. The entire thing appears to, I think it's modeled after like Canterbury Tables or something like that, because sure. It has a very picaresque structure where every chapter or couple of chapters will be essentially a self-contained little horror story, which made it excellent for listening to while I was running. But it really is a stupendous piece of work. It's creepy and metal as hell and so cool. And it's a very quick read, and I would urge you all to check it out. So, yeah. And for my caution, I read The Devastation of Baal by Guy Haley, which is a Space Marines book. It's the Blood Angels trying to stop the Tyranids from conquering their home world, doing the Tyranid thing of stripping it of all life. Yeah. It's not like a bad book, but I was kind of disappointed in it because the climax of it is essentially the Tyranids, who are giant space bugs, the Blood Angels, who are, of course, genetically engineered super soldiers, who are also Italian space vampires, and the demons of Khorne, who are demons, all fighting it out over on a world. And it doesn't really do enough with that. That should be half the book, and instead it kind of happens in a chapter and a lot off screen, which is very disappointing.
What's the rest of the book about?
Yeah. Mostly just them fighting the Tyranids and exploring like what it means to be a Blood Angel. And I mean, the Italian space vampire is kind of an interesting thing, but it should have been more the demons.
As with so many things in the Warhammer 40,000 sort of greater universe, it's one of those things that's very it's a hook that sounds great, and I don't know if it's ever really used to its full potential. You know.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely not here. I might read Hell's Reach at some point, which does live up to the sheer stupid awesomeness of 40K, but this book didn't.
I am no stranger to a 40K novel, my friend. I will read that. I will read that garbage, no problem.
Yeah,
I'll keep drinking that garbage, whatever. Anyways, Dan, you got something for us?
Yeah. Okay, so I got a recommendation, and it's not all that super obscure, but it was new to me. So, you know, Philip K. Dick is, of course, one of the greats of American science fiction, especially kind of mid-century science fiction. He's very famous. People know his stuff, even if, you know, they don't know that they know his stuff, between like Blade Runner and Total Recall and all that. But I had most of the stuff I read was his kind of what we might call his later normal period, and then on to his totally batshit 70s period. But I hadn't really read a lot of his earlier stuff. But I have been reading The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, which was first published in 1964. So it is one of his kind of earlier full novels, and I am loving it. I am having a blast while I read it because it is easily as unhinged as anything else he had written, but it's a little more contained in its unhingedness. Well, unhinged. But just to give you guys a taste of kind of what's going on, the main characters are all involved in an industry of creating accessories for play sets for dolls that people on off-world colonies will use in conjunction with a psychoactive drug to project their minds into a kind of world of domestic Barbie Ken bliss to escape from their horrible lives living in shanty towns on Mars and Ganymede. And in this business, psychics are employed to have precognitive predictions of what the year's fashions are going to be. It's phenomenal. And that's just the setup. It spins off into way weirder directions, but I'm having a blast with it. I think anyone who listens to this show would probably have a lot of fun with it too.
It's Minority Report for Mattel.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the Minority Report precog setup, but for which kind of like designs of pottery are going to be a real hit for the, play set, which we sell our addictive hallucinogens to desperate people who got drafted by the UN to go live on Mars.
A more realistic Minority Report.
Yeah.
It's basically now is what this
is. Part of the setup is that global warming has gotten so bad that there's 130, 140 degree days. And when you travel around, you travel in like little car pods, and then you have to dash inside so you don't get sunburned just from walking in between cars.
Wait, he predicted global warming?
Wow. I don't know if he predicted. It's just an element of like everything going to shit, you know, kind of at that time. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But it's pretty wild.
Yeah, it fucking sounds insane. What are the stigmata?
I haven't gotten to that part yet. I don't know.
Oh, shit.
We'll find out. Yeah. So the titular Palmer Eldritch is a billionaire who has been gone for years on a trip to Proxima Centauri, the nearest star system, to, of course, the Sol system where everyone, all the humans live, and which is known to have intelligent life on it, but there's not, apparently no one goes back and forth with it. And he's mysteriously returned and crash landed on Pluto. So, I mean, everything about it is just totally insane. The three stigmata of Palmer Eldritch. Find it wherever fine books are loaned at your local library or purchased at your local bookstore. As for something to kind of caution people off of, you know, I'm going to have to say I was a little underwhelmed by the Arby's buffalo chicken sliders. It's a good concept. I like the idea. I don't really like sauce drenched fast food because it cuts against the purpose of it being a convenience food to me. Like you end up having to like, I don't know, it's more of a to do. And it was not worth it for the kind of the mess and the sick feeling you get from eating fast food.
Ronald, do you have a recommendation and caution?
That is a shame. I would have tried those, but I will caution away from them.
Thank you. I mean, you know, keep your own counsel. I mean, yeah. That might be right up your alley.
Okay, I got a recommendation. Let's see. This season 2 of this just finished. It's a show called Hacks on HBO. Very funny. It's a comedy. It's basically about this aging woman comedian who is in a Vegas show, and she hires a younger comedy writer to kind of keep her up to date and write up some new jokes for her. And the dynamic between two is really, really good. They kind of fight a lot, but they also are kind of alike in a lot of ways. The characters are great. The show's really funny. I recommend it. It's on HBO. Caution. I will caution you against driving down I-95 on the weekends. Like, man, it's just every time you look at it in advance and you're like, oh, it's only going to be like an hour and a half drive. Just double that. You know, the traffic is always so terrible on that.
Have you considered getting like a gigantic truck?
Like one of those that like lifts and then you just like drive over everyone else?
Well, even better yet, you get a big truck and then you just drive like an asshole until someone honks at you, and then you immediately abandon wherever you were going to just destroy that person's life.
It's probably faster, honestly.
Well, it's something.
It's less boring.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's all I got.
Yeah. Rahul, what do you got for us?
All right, so I know I'm like 35 years late to this party, but that's pretty on brand.
I've got a little show called The Honeymooners.
I'm just going to recommend a movie called Highlander, which I've never seen. But at this part.
Wait.
You were going around repeating the Aqua Teen Hunger Force, The Highlander was a documentary.
That is correct.
The events happened
I've seen
in
The
real
Quickening.
Time.
I've only seen The Quickening.
You've seen The Quickening and not the original?
It was so bad. So it made me swear off the entire Highlander series.
You're like, no, that sequel everyone said sucked. I better not watch the original that people say is good.
But there's this fucking part in it when Sean Connery's like, he claims with a straight face to be Egyptian. I'm like, it's ancient Egyptian. Maybe they explain it later, but it's killing me. He's like, I'm actually ancient Egyptian.
wait, you haven't finished it?
No, I haven't
finished it. You're recommending like the first half of Highlander because of something weird Sean Connery said.
I was like,
I got a good feel about where this even... is everybody.
Exactly.
Have you even seen the Kurgan yet?
Who?
Okay, asked and answered.
My goodness.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch that next year. Maybe I'll fix it up next year.
I mean, another 35 years.
Rahul, I just want to say I feel a close kinship with you right now because this is how I watch movies also, and I love it.
It's so much better. We can really like digest things, you know, understand them at our own pace.
Unfortunately for Rahul, he does not understand any of the media that he watches.
Hey, that's the only way to live, baby.
I mean, if you understand it, then it gets inside your head and manipulates you. If you don't understand it, you're your own man standing athwart history and shouting something no one understands.
There can be only one or something.
There can be only... Oh, wait, I haven't finished the movie. I don't know what the rest of this is. I literally paused it in the middle of that line.
And I like to recommend against a Netflix movie called The Siege of Jedotville. It was like a movie about a real thing that happened where like some Irish UN Irish troops were sent to the Congo as a UN peacekeeping envoy, and then shit goes down. They're hung out high and dry, and you know, Congo.
They have to do like heroics to survive.
Yeah, they're just being attacked like during the middle of upheavals in the Congos. You know, they always have like military authoritarianism. I don't know, whatever. In any case, it was okay, so I'm recommending against it.
It was okay, like it's the thumbs down.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't know, it just didn't like hit the spot. You know, like it just wasn't. Yeah.
I want to point out the sheer chaos energy of Rahul. He liked The Highlander, but refused to finish it. But apparently The Siege of Jadotville, a movie I had never heard of, he's like, I'm not liking this, but I must press through.
I made a promise. I made a solemn pledge to the people who made this movie.
Look, man, it's just Ireland. You know, like, I feel a connection to Ireland. Being an Indian, you know, we both start with I. There's a connection there.
You both got fucked over by the British.
Yeah. Absolutely. From an Irish American to Rahul, solidarity in your struggle against the perfidious English.
Thank you, sir. Yes. It's me and you versus the British Empire.
The residents of Indiana versus.
Yeah, this is a fun thing about Rahul. Whenever anyone says he's Indian, he will indignantly say that he is from Indiana, which is absolutely true, but generally not what the person is getting at.
I did want to. Now I am from Indiana. I was born there.
No way!
Whoa, you guys both are from Indiana.
Shit, we're like brothers.
We're basically brothers. Yeah, but there was one time I got a shirt when I was thrifting in Texas one time, and I got a shirt that was just, it was so crazy to me because it was just like a green shirt with a red or like a red faded outline of the Republic of India on it, and like no other graphics or anything. So I was like, well, I gotta pay $4 for that.
Yeah.
And so then I was wearing it, you know, I would just wear it around. I was just like, oh, it's one of my shirts. And there was one time I stopped for gas. I was like in college at the time, and I stopped for gas at this gas station between, I went to a rural college in South Shelby County in Alabama called Montevallo. But on the way there to class one day, I stopped in at one of my usual gas stations and I walked inside. And the fellow working the counter, he was a South Asian guy. And he says, like, hey, it's India National Day. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? What? He was like, your shirt. It's today. It's India's National Day today. You're wearing the shirt. It's great. Just celebrate. Like, oh, yeah, I just wore the shirt today.
That's amazing.
So it was, I had a wonderful moment. Again, I connected with my South Asian brothers in Imperial Oppression without even meaning to.
It's just faded. It was just fate.
It's fate.
Although, speaking of Indiana, I used to always tell everybody I met that I was born in Indiana because it's pretty exotic and it's an instant conversation starter. But then it was the first state to go for Trump, and now I don't know what to say because I've got nothing else, man.
Like, I, you know what? I don't think that. That's going to count against you if you say that you were born there, bud.
I mean, at the very least, it went for Trump far after you had left.
Yeah.
Although, on the other hand, you did vote for Trump, what was it, 20 times in New Mexico?
Yeah, like 40 or 50.
I mean, it didn't end up mattering, but was a little bit disgraceful.
I mean, look, if carving Trump into my forehead doesn't convince people, there's nothing else I can do.
You can take the boy out of Indiana, but...
Anyways, before Rahul plugs whatever he's going to plug, Dan, you actually have things to plug.
Oh, yeah. It's a little embarrassing, honestly, because we have the pod has been under a bit of a hiatus at the moment. We have not released an episode in many months, but it is still a going concern. Please check out The Cannonball, a podcast attempt to read all of the books in the Western canon as defined by Harold Bloom, who we contest with in the course of the show. There's still plenty of back episodes to get all caught up on the great works of the Western literary corpus, your Montaigne, your Don Quixote, your Rasselas, Prince of Abyssinia by Samuel Johnson. It is still a going concern. We are going to be recording some new episodes on some more Romantic era poetry coming up. So that was actually a great way. I learned a lot doing those episodes. So if you're like me and are a dum-dum about poetry, you can see some of our last few episodes and get caught up. But yeah, check out the Cannonball podcast. You're going to love it. That's our guarantee.
And not really a money enforceable back. Guarantee, but you probably will actually love it, statistically speaking. Anyways, Rahul, what do you got to plug for us this week?
All right, sir. Well, I recently heard about a bird that you may already all know about. It's called the shrike. Have you heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I want to plug. I did not know about this, and I read about it, and I was like, this is sweet. And then you like look up the bird, and it's like this cute little thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It does. It looks like a little like sparrow. It's just like a little songbird looking guy, but it's the most metal. It's the most metal animal.
Rahul, do you want to explain what the shrike is to our listeners who may
not
heard of it?
No, it's better if he's just like go look up shrikes.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, okay, look it up.
Yeah, look it up and experience the same joy Rahul did when he found out about like, shrikes.
I believe there's like a cosmic enemy in the Hyperion series called the Shrike.
Yeah,
I mean, salvation. Ah,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's actually a pretty common name for enemies and things where they just want to give them like one word, you know, the types pretentious names or not pretentious, yeah, but like
there's a shrike menacing. in the Traction City Chronicles.
Yeah, there's also a lodge of the shrike in Werewolf the Forsaken to tie it back. Yeah. Mm. Anyways,
I also nicknamed myself the Shrike.
After hearing about them.
Yeah.
I mean, you do both love impaling.
Yeah. And being tiny.
That was a sex joke, you see.
Except your arms are huge.
Yeah. I'm confused. Not, but thank you.
Yeah. Anyways, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna get rich. Finger in the bottle. Now,